Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
With that, we bring in our good friend Mark Loganrich from SI.com. Welcome back, Mark. Great to hear you.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks. Hey, thanks for playing that, too. As I joined Matt as being a Yankees fan, so it's nice to hear the sweep call.
Yes. And that's actually what I was listening to last night. I had a Spikes game last night up at Williamsport. I literally got in the car in the bottom of the ninth inning. I went, oh, okay. So that's the only part I heard. So, all right. Mark, it is the talking season, and boy, there's been a lot of talk.
What? Really? Hardly. I think they solved everything this week, right? In Indy?
Yeah, I feel absolutely. We're on our way. We know which networks. We know how much money. We know the new schedule. Oh, that's right. We know none of it. So I'll get to the football part first, then we'll get to the other issue part in a moment. James Franklin, I think, sounded a very optimistic tone about his team. How did you view it?
Much the same way, yeah. And he did last year, too. I think that, you know, I think he even noted that if you come in there and say it's not been a great summer, then you're already having, you're bringing a defeatist attitude, which he certainly won't do. I was struck by his joking tone, but there was that kernel of truth behind it when he mentioned about the offensive line, and I've heard him say it, you know, year after year after year. I really think the offensive line is going to be the strength of this team this year. He pulled back on that. There was, you know, as I said, there's a bit of a joking tone, kind of a light tone to it, but I think he made that point in that he's not going to come out and overrepresent a group that people have a ton of questions about, particularly coming off a year, which statistically, if I remember, was like the second worst rushing season in Penn State history, and, you know, per yards or yards per game average. So I appreciated that moment. That also leads me to believe that he's got a lot of signals there. I think internally that he feels pretty good about his offensive line, at least going through like a 6 or 7 player deep group of players that he has online for that group. Everything else, it looked like they had they're pretty well established going into training camp. I don't see a super ton of position battles going on, you know, maybe for reserve roles and, you know, rotational spots and stuff like that. But it really sounds like I would think a majority of those spots are pretty well settled. That's not the worst problem to have, you know, 4 days before you start camp.
Yeah, no, I feel like, let's just take defense. I think there's as many as 26 or 27 guys that will be playing in the rotation on defense. Yeah. When I really sit down, and Jack Hamm and I have taken a long look at it, as the guys we think, at least starting out, can play, they can play as many as 26, 27 guys. That's a good problem to have. And I also thought, actually, to me, the biggest slice of news in the whole thing from James was when he talked about P.J. Mustipher and getting through the conditioning part.
Oh, no question. And he brought that up. It was an entertaining way he brought that up because, I mean, if P.J. ate as much as James said he did, that's $300 at St. Elmo, I think.
You and I know that price.
And so I was just maybe, I don't know, did by mentioning St. Elmo and the dais, did that cover dinner? No.
That makes Craig Holtz feel a lot better. The Penn State who runs it, better believe it. When I mentioned I was there in March, it didn't cover my bill, but I still mentioned it.
Yeah, they've given us the nice room, that beautiful private room there. That's been great, but, you know, the bill was still full.
Yes.
Totally worth it.
Yes.
Anyway, absolutely. That PJ is, you know, that 100% range, at least physically, the conditioning test being the big moment. Having him back at full strength, you know, no matter when you get him at full strength, how many weeks it takes really to be at full speed physically, mentally, you know, speed-wise, everything like that. I think he, as a veteran, he is able to, I think, ramp himself up more quickly than some younger players would. But that's a core position a veteran status to have in that middle. And then you mentioned all the players. I mean, James has said it multiple times that he thinks he has both sides of the ball, a ton of players who can play. And then looking through that defense, I mean, the starting defense that you're going to see against Purdue, imagine how different that could be, not even necessarily through like injuries or anything like that, but just playing time by mid-season, later in the season, as more players get experience, get acclimated, and kind of win their way onto the field. I mean, there's a ton of guys that really could be more than, you know, just more than, you know, 8-10 plays a game kind of players.
Well, and that's when I get back to PJ, for example. Let's take the depth there. He doesn't have to play 70 plays for them, in my opinion. I mean, if he plays 30, 35 plays, great, because Ellie's an Izzard. To me, the plus, the downside is losing Mustafer. The plus is they got to play a lot more last year.
Yeah, and they played with Derek D'Angelo, which was probably a really good, you know, built-in element to have them there.
And then you've got Vandenberg. You've got Beeman back. And then you add in Zane Durant. That's six guys. See, that's what takes the pressure off a guy like PJ coming back.
And a lot of, you know, going through when the summer, we've been up there for a couple of the media sessions, two players that really kind of came up were Zane Durant and Jordan Vandenberg as guys that we really haven't seen. I mean, we saw Jordan a little bit last year, places here and there, and Hakeem 2 years ago. But if they have impact player ability going for them, the kind of rotation John Scott can use, I mean, he can really just kind of tinker with that group and be incredibly situational, using guys against, you know, in down and distance and against packages and formations, and really, really leverage that. It'd be interesting with, you know, the way Manny Diaz likes to call. I mean, I think James called it a downhill defense, that he could incorporate those guys too into the elements, you know, the rush game that he really like truly believes in.
James does believe in the running game. He really does. And because he feels if you got the threat of balance, now the defense is thinking. So in the running game, you and I both know, Mark, they put a lot of time in on the running game in the spring. So what was your reaction to some of the elements he talked about with the running game?
Going just over the year and talking to, like, Kevon Lee and Jaywan Sider, even them kind of building up to what James was discussing about the run game, I really feel like that they don't necessarily, as you mentioned, the balance. I don't think they view this as this has to be a 50-50 split or a 60-40 split.
Right.
Over the course of 12, 13 games. Even in the game, there's still obviously situations where they might be calling Sean to throw 40, 45 times. And that perfectly fits in sync with that offense straight away against Purdue. I mean, that might be a game where he's coming out slinging. Because, against Purdue's defense, that sort of thing. But if you have guys not just who can run, but who can break tackles and who can get you yards, this is one of the main things that they weren't doing last year, is that yards after contact, they were last in the Big Ten, according to the one stat service that I had subscribed to. They were last in the Big Ten in yards after contact. So they weren't getting tough yards. And you heard Jaywan Sider say that. And, you've heard James Franklin say that over time. Even Mike Yersin just said that. Tough yards matter. Tough yards matter in situations to get you in better down and distance situations and to keep you, as James likes to say, on schedule. Those are I think when he's talking about running game, he doesn't it's not this idea that you need to be a 180, 200 yard a game dominant rush team, but you need to have a run game that can support the totality of the offense in keeping you either on a down schedule or getting a third and two.
Right.
Without having to resort to a Philly special or something like that.
Right. In other words, look, to me, here's where one of the keys to the running game is this. I can go play action pass, and you have to respect it because I actually can run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That's the threat
good at
of it.
Too. You know, Sean has a good little play action move.
Yep.
And as a veteran, you know, he could, you know, him being able to do that. I go back to the run. When Trace had a great one. Trace McSorley had a great play action. And that was, you know, that was so beneficial to that offense. If they are able to cultivate that again with a guy who is on first down, whoever the running back may be, Kevon down to the freshman, if on first down they're getting you five, the world opens up again.
Yep, no question. The other part's dealing with the commissioner. He had his press conference. He said some stuff, but nothing specific along the way. How did you view what he said about expansion moving forward?
Notre Dame.
Yes,
and then
that's exactly what I thought.
And if there are any other schools that we deem that could be commissioned then in tandem with them, perhaps, but Notre Dame. It's not so much what he said, but I've been reading some of the other, you know, some of the national media that he gave access to, where he discusses this a little bit more. And overall, the tone of that coverage has been very complimentary. It's very different than it was in 2020.
Right.
I think, and you know, rightfully so, that he, you know, he came into just an unfathomable situation in college football and in Big Ten at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at Sports Illustrated, Ross Dellinger reported that he was receiving death threats in 2020 after initially canceling the season. So the tone of this coverage seemed to me that after 2 years, now Kevin Warren's in a position of strength with the media rights package and being kind of taking an offensive stance in bringing aboard USC and UCLA. So I think that was where his tone stemmed from, it seemed to me, with regard to expansion, is that he just pretty much seemed to say, we will expand when we feel, you know, the next expansion target is out there and available. And, you know, he didn't have to say Notre Dame, but it was pretty much implied.
Yes, right. There's the other part to it. The part where USC and UCLA would be full partners coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because obviously their mere presence, because it's the beginning of a TV contract, their mere presence is going to take a great number and make it even better. But I think there was another message in there, too. Hey, Notre Dame, if you come in, you'll be a full partner, too. I kind of read between the lines on that.
Absolutely. When I saw that line about the full partnerships, which, again, as you said, you made sense. I would think USC and UCLA made that part of their negotiation stance, saying, we're going to come in and we're going to raise... What are we going to raise your media rights deal? 10, 20%? I don't know. 30%?
Right.
I mean, we're going to have action on this, so we want to be full partners right away as opposed to what happened with Maryland and Rutgers. And, you know, when you negotiate, you're already able to send signals like that. So, absolutely. That was pretty savvy on his part to say, you know, the next, you know, again, imply the fact that the next big addition also could come in as a 100% full partner.
The key is USC and UCLA had leverage. Rutgers and Maryland had none.
Notre Dame.
Well, exactly. $48 million for Rutgers, $120.5 million for Maryland. But USC and UCLA had leverage. Rutgers, Maryland, even Nebraska had none.
Mm-hmm.
But Notre Dame has leverage, so they know which side they fall on.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, have you mentioned this before? I'm pretty sure you mentioned this before, that what happens if NBC is part of the media rights deal? How does that lay out basically a red carpet for Notre Dame, essentially, to be almost maintain its current media deal and join a conference?
It is obvious in hearing what the commissioner said when he used the words 5 to 105 as to how media is consumed. But then Mark Silverman in private interviews was even more direct about it, because there's been a concern among athletic directors in the Big Ten and some of the presidents about, you know, streaming. All right. I think there's some of those fears have been put to the side. It has become obvious now. It doesn't take a genius. There's going to be a streaming option. It doesn't mean it's extensive or anything, but what do you think about that?
I think it has to be in there. That doesn't mean that the Big Ten title game is going to be on Apple TV or anything like that. I mean, those the monumental games, the games that we know of now are still going to be on. The big, I think, are just general television cable platforms for, I don't want to say foreseeable future, but I don't know, another decade perhaps. I don't know. That shift is going to go maybe quicker than I expect, or maybe it's going to come loop around and the streaming services are going to collapse onto themselves for, you know, lack of additional subscribers. I really don't know. But there has to be. There has to be a streaming element to it, because that's the future of viewership. I mean, I did a story like 4 years ago about the Pennsylvania State wrestling tournament going to a streaming service, went to Flow Wrestling. Mm-hmm. And part of it is because the market, I mean, the wrestlers have Flow Wrestling. And, you know, the people at the Giant Center in Hershey, a lot of them there were like, what on earth is Flow Wrestling? You know, because they're older generations, but quickly they adhere to it. And I, you know, talking to some of the coaches, the coaches again 3 or 4 years ago were telling me that kids who don't watch television, they watch Flow and YouTube. And that, again, this was before TikTok. This was before, you know, kind of like really video, like stream, mm-hmm. you know, stream video was even more saturated than it is. I just think streaming absolutely has to be an element of this. And, you know, you might sneak a couple of games in there, here and there, but it's a matter of how much, you know, streaming service is going to pay for that. I'm thinking I might bid in there. I might throw a bid for, like, Penn State's first offensive play of the second quarter, excuse me, of, like, a non-conference game in 2025, you know. What did that cost me, $10,000? I really have no idea, but I might have rights to that one play.
You've always been bold, and I've admired that.
Bold and aggressive.
Mark, always a pleasure, my friend.
I
can't
so
wait to see you at Media Day.
Yeah, appreciate it. See you then.